Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. Today, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates. My guest is April McLean Delaney. She's a Democrat, one of 14 candidates running for Congress in the 6th Congressional District. I misspoke at the very top of the show. There were at one time 16 candidates. Two of them have dropped out. At least one has endorsed April McLean Delaney. The incumbent in the seat is Representative David Trone. He's running for the Senate against Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks and some other candidates. District 6 is in the northwest part of our state. It includes all of Garrett, Allegheny, Frederick, and Washington counties, as well as part of Montgomery County. April McLean Delaney's husband, John Delaney, held the 6th district seat for 6 years, from 2013 to 2019. Ms. McLean Delaney was born in Buell, Idaho, the daughter of a potato farmer. She lives in Potomac. Until she left to pursue the 6th district seat, she served as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Communications and Information at the U.S. Department of Commerce. Prior to that, she was a member of the board and Washington director of Common Sense Media, a nonprofit organization that reviews and recommends entertainment and technology for kids. Her other philanthropic endeavors have included the Georgetown University Institute for Women and the International Center for Research on Women. April McLean Delaney holds an undergraduate degree from Northwestern University and a law degree from the Georgetown University Law School. She is 59 years old. She and her husband John are the parents of 4 daughters. You are welcome to join our conversation with April McLean Delaney, who joins us on Zoom. You can join us at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. Ms. McLean Delaney, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to talk about the race and introduce all the listeners to what we're doing.
So as I mentioned, there were at one point 16 candidates. Now there are 14. Yes. One of them, Dr. Grammer, has endorsed you.
Also Joel Robin, both of them. The people that dropped out have endorsed me.
Yeah, they dropped out just last month. They'll still be on the ballot, I guess, though, because those have already been prepared, as far as I know. But how do you distinguish yourself in such a large field? 14 is still a pretty healthy number.
It is a healthy number, but I do think I distinguish myself in a multitude of ways. It is a diverse field of people, but I have a really long set of professional and personal life experiences, and almost 30 years in the public and private sector, and also in nonprofit. Daughter of an Idaho potato farmer, mother of 4. And so I think that I've lived a very full life. I often say, as I'm running against a Gen Z opponent and some younger opponents, that I'm a Gen X mom that has 3 Gen Z kids and a millennial. How I'm distinguishing myself is that I'm bringing a common sense, common ground platform. I have been driving results and consensus building in this town for 25, 30 years in nonprofit. I often used to say I was kid partisan, because when I was at Common Sense Media and talking about kids' privacy, I would go into Republican or Democratic members of Congress and say, hey, I'm kid partisan. Let's talk about online safety. And it really made a difference. So I think that it's a younger field. It's filled with a lot of, state delegates and others. But I think my distinguishing, differentiation is really my 30 years of experience, that I can hit the ground running in Congress, and that I know how to communicate across this district, because it is a microcosm of America: red, blue, urban, rural, a tech corridor, and also an ag preserve. And it actually takes different kinds of communications and life skills to meet people where they are and to drive consensus.
I know one of your opponents is Joe Vogel, who's a member of the state legislature. He's probably the youngest member, one of the youngest members in the General Assembly now, the appeal of politics in general to you, because when you talk about building consensus, you talk about bringing people together, you talk about common sense solutions. These are things we've heard from people both in the Republican and the Democratic
There's a
parties.
yearning need for it right now.
Yeah.
Everyone wants.
Yeah, there's a need for it, but boy, the capacity, the opportunity for it seems awfully limited given the bifurcation and the polarity of the American political landscape. How do you overcome that huge barrier where there is this tribal instinct among Republicans and Democrats that have caused, for example, this current Congress to be the least productive Congress since the
Yeah,
Second World
sadly.
War?
Well, I have a lot to respond on that one. I'm going to start with the latter and then go into what I think I can do. First of all, I don't think it's the least productive because I, as a former Biden official, as Deputy Assistant Secretary of Communications working for Gina Raimondo, I think that the president has a ton of accomplishments in the Inflation Reduction Act, CHIPS legislation. I worked on that $65 billion broadband rollout. If you think about some of the drama and trauma from the former administration, the reparation of what we had to do internationally, I actually think that there has been a lot of bipartisan work. And members from both sides of the aisle have a realization for our economic and national security that we needed to come together. And so I do think that there has been things done. There is obviously a lot of partisanship and acrimony. And I have lived, I came in the late 1980s to Georgetown Law Center from Idaho. And I remember a time when, Senators Hatch and Kennedy would go out golfing. And so I still have memories of that functioning and very real, workable, Congress. But you know what? I think that there is still an ability to work across the aisle. I think the more local you get, obviously at a very local or town or municipal level, it gets easier. But for me, I have spent a lot of time advocating on issues both in the private sector and in nonprofit. And I think it's approaching people where they are, listening and talking to kitchen table ideas and our national security. Now, there is a far MAGA part of the Republican Party that is really trying to stop progress. And I think you have to stand firm against that because it is very important. I think extremism is really undermining our democracy and undermining progress against the things that we have to do work on. But just to that point of people not being able to work together, we almost had a comprehensive immigration reform bill 10 years ago with Boehner, and it wasn't brought to a vote because of the far right. And then just now, we almost were able to get it through. And then it was put into a political football by the former president because he wanted to use it as an election dividing issue. So I do think that there is an ability to do some good work and to move forward, but you also have to stand very strongly for our institutions of government, for democracy. And also, standing up against some of the platforms and the misinformation that is happening online right now that is also undermining our democracy, but amplifying some of the division.
Yeah, I take your point. I think it's a really fair one about Mr. Biden's accomplishments when it comes to infrastructure and the CHIPS Act and restoring credibility in the international community. I think you're exactly right about all that. And I think a lot of folks are happy to hear you say that you need to stand strong and stand firm in the face of extremism. But when you look at the numbers, some 700 plus bills introduced in Congress and fewer than 30 actually passed. So that standing strong and that standing firm against extremism just leads to nothing happening. We have this immigration bill that you mentioned. Senator Lankford worked on this for 4 months, you know, a very conservative senator from Oklahoma. So, you know, in the face of that extremism in the MAGA wing of the Republican Party, given that as a core fundament of the situation in Congress now, what defines success for you moving forward? How do we move forward given the fact that the stagnation caused by the extreme wing of the Republican Party doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon?
Well, I think that also has a lot of different ways you can answer it, but I'm going to start with one. I think the American people as a whole, collectively, are tired of the drama, of the partisanship, of the anger. They want to get things done on a multitude of different areas, from infrastructure to immigration, to working on a good living wage, to affordable college debt. I mean, there's a whole host, and to choice, obviously, to choice, which is huge in my issue. But you know, what do you do? I think it's really important who we elect, Tom. I mean, we have to start electing people who will get things done. And I think why there's so much anger in America and people feel left behind is because we're not getting things done. We're not addressing these issues. And in fact, we're starting to, you know, fall behind globally. I mean, if you think about some of our allies internationally, I mean, you know, China has a 20 and 30 year plan. And we, you know, we seem to, you know, vacillate back and forth because of some of these politics. What do you do? I think you have to stand firm. I think that it matters where, who is in the majority. And I sure as hope that we, you know, keep the Senate and flip the House, and losing is not an option for the president at the top of the ticket. But it is also, I think, important. And this is something that goes back to my background. I've worked in, how media, I helped stop Common Sense Media, which is the leading nonprofit in the country, on how media impacts kids' health and well-being. You know, not only do we rate and educate, media for parents, but we were the first ones almost 15 years ago to talk about comprehensive privacy for kids, tracking, the almost correlation with the advent of the iPhone in 2007, with kids' mental health, declining mental health, anxiety and depression are almost a straight line with the advent of the iPhone in 2007. And you know what, as I sat there and I was trying to get all of this legislation, or at least to update our telecommunications legislation from the Act of 34 and the Act of 96, that I realized that we were losing a communications kind of, that there was not enough, we needed to educate more. And I think it's really important to talk about issues and then talk about how they impact kids, talk about local communities. And I think it's actually part of it is communicating why it's so important to work together. And over the last 15 years, we have had a lot of wins. And in fact, there might be a comprehensive privacy federal bill that gets through this session. I've been working on one for 10, 12 years. So I hope it comes through this session. With respect to the other part is I think that it's not going to happen at the top in Congress. I think almost we have to go back to our local communities, and our local communities need to start dialoguing again and thinking about who they send to Congress, because why are some of these crazy extremists getting elected? And I think it's because there is so much anger about the lack of direction. But the last thing I'll say is I was at a Rotary meeting in Frederick, Maryland, and 200 people show up every week, Republican, Democrat, young, old, gay, straight, black, white, Latino, and it doesn't matter. They're all there just to do public service and to lift up the local community. And I kind of was a little misty because my dad was in the Rotary in Buell, Idaho. And I said, if more people were in the Rotary and were working together, we'd have a lot less division in this country. And maybe we need to start going back to a local level to start driving that dialogue and to start thinking about who we elect on a national basis.
April McLean Delaney is a candidate to fill the open 6th District congressional seat. It's our Conversations with the Candidates series. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more with April McLean Delaney. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And by the way, I want to let you know about a forum that I'll be moderating for candidates for Baltimore mayor and president of the city council. It's sponsored by the Mount Vernon Belvedere Association and a number of other neighborhood groups. It'll take place at Emmanuel Episcopal Church on Cathedral Street in Mount Vernon next Tuesday night, April 16th, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And also, one other programming item here. On the website, we now have a review of The Squirrels, which is at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. That's part of the 6th District. Jay Wynn Russick was here the other day. We had some technical difficulties when we tried to present that review at that time. So now we have recorded a new one, and it is on the website. So you can check us out at wypr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, indoor plant guru and stylist Hilton Carter has a new book about how to propagate houseplants. We'll talk to him, and we'll talk to leaders of the University of Baltimore Center for Families, Children, and the Courts about the issue of parental accountability and juvenile crime. So that's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're continuing our series of conversations with the candidates with April McLean Delaney, a former top official at the Commerce Department who's running for Congress in the 6th District Democratic primary. That district is currently represented by Representative David Trone, who is running for Senate in the May primary against Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks. April McLean Delaney's husband, John, held the seat for 6 years. He left in 2019. To run for president. The 6th District includes all of Garrett, Allegheny, Frederick, and Washington counties, as well as a portion of Montgomery County. You are welcome to join our conversation. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Let's go to the phones. We have Tom calling from Mount Vernon. Welcome to the show. Always nice to hear from you, Tom.
It's good to be on the show, and thanks so much, Tom. I was wondering, Ms. Delaney, as a person from Potomac, can you explain to me how you can appeal to factory workers who were laid off at the Luke Paper Plant in Luke, Maryland, ex-coal miners out in Lanaconan, Maryland, and mechanics and railroad workers in Cumberland? How are you going to appeal to them from a person from Potomac?
I don't know if you heard the beginning of my introduction, but, you know, I grew up in a very small rural town in Idaho. Farmer's daughter, working family, married. My husband is the first in his family to go to college. Son of a union electrician, went to actually college on a union electrician scholarship from the IBEW. And so, you know, we actually, you know, both, you know, really came from nothing, and by the grace of God and scholarship, really kind of made our, our life together, and so we appreciate the American dream and want to give back. But to your point specifically about relation and understanding these issues, not only did I grow up in that type of environment, but I've spent my life really working in nonprofit for kids and families and in education. I helped start a K-12 digital curriculum in 120,000 public schools. But I also, issues of poverty, children, kids' poverty and food insecurity are big issues that I've worked on in both nonprofit and in the private sector. But most recently in the Biden administration, I actually had the privilege of being the number two at my agency, NTIA, in rolling out broadband connectivity to kind of really uplift and connect, the digital divide. We all know how important connectivity is with, after COVID, but also, to really work with the Department of Commerce and a lot of this infrastructure funding, whether it be in CHIPS, whether it be through, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is, has a lot of green energy or infrastructure funding. And I really think it's important, and I commend the president for really reshoring a lot of our industrial policy, both for economic and national security reasons. And I think what my big thing is that as I go into Allegheny and Garrett, Washington County, and you see that these towns have had a lot of their industrial base leave, and there's a lot of hurt, and there's not good living wages, and $1,560 is not enough to have healthcare and affordable rent. And so I'm really focused on strategically, using some of these infrastructure funds to drive workforce development, to maybe get a chips factory into like Allegheny or Garrett, to STEM hubs, innovation fund, because really we need to give hope and to drive new types of investment so that people who grow up in their communities can stay there. And it's really these issues, it's not just about relatability. It's about, the our building community and hope, and there's something about dignity and respect about having a a job which you can support your family on, which is getting increasingly hard to do, as we know, in this country. So that's kind of, I relate to it, but I also have solutions for it. And I think it's really public-private coming together to strategically, with a vision, to strategically look at how investment can give hope and jobs, and also, how we educate our kids and we get healthcare. I think that's what comes with being a mama of four.
And I think our colleague Tom brings up an interesting point about the 6th district. It does have some of Montgomery County in it, but most of it is, Western Maryland. So we're talking about Frederick, Allegheny, Garrett, as you've mentioned. And the needs and concerns of that district can be different in those areas than they are
Very
in
different.
that little part of Montgomery County. Let me also ask you about the fact that you've lived in Potomac, as far as I know, for quite a while, you and your husband and family. Potomac is now in the 8th district. Should that be a matter of concern for voters, particularly if as they think about who's the strongest nominee going to be in a general election?
Well, I definitely think I'm the strongest nominee, and I will deliver results. And I think that's what people care about. I haven't moved the line, from my house from 6 to 8 used to be almost half a block. In fact, our house was in the district, and then the line moved to literally half a block away, two houses away. And now it's a little bit further up River Road. But I would say, Congressman Trone, I think, has been a superlative member of Congress. He has delivered, shown up everywhere. He has delivered incredible, some of the bipartisan infrastructure from the president, but has been very responsive in terms of a lot of earmarks and transportation, education issues. And I think that's my blueprint as well. I think what's important to people is that you are able to hit the ground running and actually effectively represent and lift up and advocate for all parts of the district. And let me tell you, it's such a big district. In our house, we always say you can't fake showing up. You got to show up. But more importantly, this district is so big. People in Frederick say, if you're in Frederick, people in Mountain Maryland will say, hey, we want someone from Mountain Maryland or from Montgomery County. Hey, we don't want someone from Frederick. It's incredible, but you realize that what's important is it's a purple district without a lot of purple people. It's very blue in Montgomery County. It's very red in Allegheny, Washington, and Garrett. And Frederick is somewhere in between, but skews more Democrat. I think why I am a good advocate for everyone is that I understand the different types of issues, and I also approach how I communicate them. And I think it just comes from having a lot of different life experiences that I'm able to relate in different ways to the different constituencies within this district. And they are very different needs. And, you know, there's some overarching ones, obviously, you know, with transportation and rural healthcare and what have you. But, you know, there are different priorities. And I intend on having excellent constituent services, setting up multiple offices, one in Western Maryland, one in Frederick, one in Montgomery County, hiring really good staff and making sure, because it's not just about getting elected, but it's about getting reelected. And you're reelected on delivering and giving good, you know, constituent services.
Yeah, and in a district that has about 550,000, 560,000 people, a little more than half are registered Democrats, a little less than half registered Republicans, but it is considered...
I think it's about 800 and some thousand people.
Oh, is it by now? Yeah.
I think every single... Well, if you think about it, there are 435 members of Congress. And I think when you divide it, our population, it's somewhere between 800 and 900,000 per every single district across America.
Okay, well, you would know better than me because you're more up on it. I guess the information I have is a little old, but the fact is that it is, as you mentioned, certainly the most purple district in the state of Maryland,
and very competitive because of that.
Very competitive indeed. So, what do you think, given the huge geographical borders of the district, and the fact that you know people in rural communities have different priorities and different needs for people in metropolitan areas. What do you see for the district as the district-specific issues that are the most important and are the ones that you would champion if you were elected?
Well, I'm going to tell you my personal priorities and then ones that I hear in addition that are issues for the district. My personal priorities are, one, because I'm the mother of four daughters, you know, codifying choice and making sure that we stand firm for maternal health care, legal, safe, accessible, reproductive freedoms. And also, you know, just in terms of really looking at how we fund Planned Parenthood and other types of issues. Two, I have spent a lifetime on, you know, uplifting kids and families, and particularly with respect to media and tech. So about safeguards and bumpers and safeguards on the use of digital platforms, how our mental health for our kids has been impacted by screens, and all of us, by the way, and really looking at how with the advent of AI, which has tremendous possibilities for investment and helping different sectors, but also making sure that there's no harm that is done. I was just listening to the driverless car liability suit that you had on the news before. And then driving investment into, like as I said, from this infrastructure funding and looking at ways that you can really build constituencies and drive coalitions for good living wages and jobs and building it up. What I hear that's across the district that are huge issues, not only in the district, but across the DMV, would be transportation. You know, we need more, you know, the MARC train. You know, it's got to have, you know, more accessibility, you know, Harper's Ferry. We got to get that ferry going across, you know, from Poolsville over to Virginia, widening 270. There's some really dangerous strips of roads in Western Mountain Maryland. And so that is really key. I hear a lot about our schools and also affordability, you know, of colleges and also, you know, just how our teachers are overwhelmed and our first responders. And then I hear a lot about inflation. So I think those are the big issues that kind of cross, you know, and rural hospitals. So those are the bigger issues. And then, you know, but I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, kitchen table issues of, you know, affordability.
And, you know, the governor, when you speak about transportation issues, for example, and widening 270, one of the issues there is that they're talking about what some people call a luxury toll lane, privately financed tolls that would help pay for that the work on that thing. This is something that when the governor
That's in Virginia. Yeah, in Virginia, that has been done, and it has eliminated a lot of traffic. I think there has been pushback by some, that they feel that it's not as equitable for everyone who uses the roads. This is the rub here. We definitely need more infrastructure funding on a federal level, which I support, because we've got to be able to upgrade and widen those roads. The problem is there's only so much infrastructure funding for every state. And so, I'm not opposed to looking at, some of these tolls, because, what it does is when you take some of that truck, a lot of those are trucks that want to use that, and commercial vehicles. So it's not just, the luxury toll, but a lot of it's commercial traffic and semis that are, can be very dangerous. And so getting some of that traffic onto these other toll roads could actually alleviate traffic for everybody else. So, I reason through things. I common sense, common ground. I use my common sense lens and all of that. But even with respect to climate issues, which I have not yet addressed and is a big issue for all of us. I think that we've got to have more mass transit. We've got to have more buses. We've got to have the MARC train. We even have to look at funding more of the metro and expansions of the metro into the 6th district. So all of these things have to be working in concert and holistically. And it is my experience has told me that, it's local, state, and federal coming together. And when you can have them all in dialogue along with the private sector, you really do have an ability to have a vision. And I don't think there's been vision.
I'm interested to hear you talk about AI. This is something that you've been involved in personally for quite a while. You mentioned it in regards to children and their safety. Thinking of it more broadly, AI, of course, being artificial intelligence and the new technologies that are changing incredibly rapidly. What do you see the federal government's role in the regulation of the internet, the regulation of tech companies, the Facebooks and Amazons and Apples of the world? What should the federal government be doing in that regard?
Oh, Tom, thank you for asking that question. This is my life work. I'm a communications lawyer. The problem is, and I alluded to it at the beginning, when I started practicing law as a communications attorney in the late 80s, there was common carrier, which was telephone, broadcast, and cable. And they were all regulated differently by the FCC. And with the convergence of technologies and when the internet was first introduced, we did not regulate it. And unfortunately, it came to the point where, I started with Common Sense Media in 2006, before Google was a verb and when Facebook was in its infancy. And really, the problem is without any bumpers and safeguards, these technology companies, really, there's no rules of the road. So what do we need to do? And this goes into, it's only going to be amplified by AI, and I will go into AI in a second, but we really need comprehensive privacy legislation. We need to know what information they're taking and to be able to have some control over how it's being used and marketed. We need to look at how the algorithms can amplify, whether it be hate speech or whether it can also, take our kids into dark patterns where it's almost addictive tech. And really looking at how, particularly I've spent my life in children, how the screens and how, there's aching, loneliness, depression, anxiety, a rewiring of these kids' brains. And I spent almost 10 years trying to get government funded studies on how it impacts kids. It just was passed with under Jamie Raskin's introduction, that Children and Media Research Act just was funded last year in Congress, which kind of gives a little bit of information on what the impact is. So what do we need? We need comprehensive privacy. We need to look at the impact of how these how broad and deep, these technology companies have, market power. So we need to look at maybe if you see Apple and Microsoft are starting to get some look from the FTC and how they market. And then we need to really see how our democracy is being impacted. And if you think about it, our cybersecurity, the issues of how technology is being used for theft, for cyber, for blackmailing, and there's really no remedies right now. And the technology companies or the big tech is like, oh, it's not our problem. But it is. It's someone's. And so I think that we really as a country need to start putting, as I say, these bumpers and safeguards on it. And what is the most frightening to me right now is the use of deep fakes in our election and how it's really hard to trust. No one knows what information to trust.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick pause there. We'll come back and talk more about the issues facing the 6th District. April McLean Delaney is my guest. She is running in the Democratic primary for the House of Representatives in the 6th Congressional District. It's our Conversations with the Candidates series. You are welcome to be part of it. 410-662-8780. If you have a question or comment for our candidate, midday@wypr.org. If you'd like to send us an email with a question and comment. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. You know, I've mentioned this before, but it bears repeating. Representative John Sarbanes and Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger are two of nearly 50 members of Congress who have announced their retirement this year. Each member of the House and Senate who is leaving is doing so for his or her own reasons, but frustration with the legislative process, which is frequently disrupted by extreme members in the majority caucus in the House, is surely a contributing factor to this mass exodus. If you just joined us today, it's another installment in our series of Conversations with the Candidates. My guest is April McLean Delaney. She's running in the May 14th primary election to become the Democratic nominee in the 6th Congressional District. That's in the northwest part of our state. And like the race for the Democratic nomination in the 3rd District, the field in District 6 is large. 14 candidates are seeking the nomination, including Delegate Joe Vogel, the youngest member of the Maryland General Assembly, and Takesha Martinez, the mayor of Hagerstown. The 6th District is one of three open House seats in this election cycle here in Maryland, along with Districts 2 and 3. Most observers think that the general election race in the 6th will be the most competitive contest in the state this year and one of the most competitive in the country. The 7 Republicans on the ballot in the GOP primary include former state delegate Neil Parrott, who has run for the seat 2 other times, and former delegate Dan Cox, the Republican nominee for governor, who lost by a wide margin to Wes Moore in 2022. April McLean Delaney joins us on Zoom. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So, Ms. Delaney, whoever the Republican nominee is will likely say that the priorities for their party include deficits, public safety, and immigration. We've talked a little bit about immigration and Senator Lankford's bill that was quashed in the House because of Speaker Mike Johnson refusing to bring it to the floor. Let's talk about public safety. What's the role of the federal government, and what can you do as one among 435 to affect and improve public safety in the 6th District?
Well, first of all, I have to say that our police and our first responders are incredible public servants. And when I was at the Department of Commerce, I saw the FirstNet Responder Network in the Biden administration. So I have incredible amount of respect. What can we do to really uplift. I think the hard part right now is that, one, we've got gun violence. We've got to deal with gun violence. You know, it's, you know, Sixth District. I mean, my dad used to go duck hunting. He didn't take a military assault weapon to a nursery school. And so it's common sense, right? I think we've got to have some common sense legislation on guns, you know, ban on military assault rifles, you know, red flag laws for mental, you know, mentally ill, or, you know, those who have demonstrated some instability, and really kind of, you know, some universal background checks. So I mean, these are common sense types of things, which I think will have an impact on crime. Two, I do think that there was, you know, and this whole era of defund the police, which I'm not so sure didn't come from, you know, out, you know, Russia or external places, because it was, you know, it was a very, you know, how that all came up. I mean, in the aftermath of COVID, but you know, I think we all know that we do not want to defund our police. If anything, we want to appreciate them. And I think if you look at Montgomery County, they are down over 150 policemen because I think a lot of early retirements, but a recruitment issue. And I think it's also, you know, on a federal level, on a state level, it's appreciating them and understanding that.
Yeah, and here in Baltimore, the police chief would tell you we're down 500 or so on our police force.
Yeah. And I also think that, you know, whether it's, you know, through, you know, our court systems, you know, there has to be, as Wes Moore said, we can have rehabilitation, but not lawlessness. And I think that is a good prism. I mean, there has to be some accountability. And we have to realize that, you know, if you're not, you're just slapping their hand, but you know, there's no accountability for a carjacking or what have you, it will continue to happen. And I think there is in DC, in Virginia and Maryland, there is a, you know, a rising awareness that we need to deal with this. You know, and, you know, federal funding, I think, comes in terms of, you know, more resources for our law enforcement, upgrading our, you know, I'm really into upgrading our NG911, which is parts still an analog of, you know, in terms of response time, you know, and putting it into 5G capacity for geolocation for our first responders. And in addition, one more thing is that, you know, I have spent a lot of time talking to our first responders, our fire, our police. And the interesting thing, I just did a tour in Rockville of the volunteer fire station. And, you know, a lot of them, the calls are not just for crime. A lot of them are for EMT. They're for health. They're for, you know, not only heart attacks, but a lot of mental health issues. And so, I mean, it's a very complicated area, but I think it's resources in terms of mental health and dealing with, you know, a whole host of different things that are not just crime per se or car accidents. So complicated, but I think a focus. And then the other issue you said, I'm sorry, it was immigration.
Well, speaking of immigration, we do have a caller with a question in that regard. This is Lisa, who's on the line from Baltimore. Yeah. What's your question, Lisa, for April McLean Delaney?
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, April, for taking my call, and Tom. I am formerly an immigrant in that I'm now a citizen, but I came through here on a religious workers visa in 2001. The religious workers visa was brought in, formulated by Ted Kennedy and John McCain in 1990, working as
there used to be common sense and bipartisanship. Yeah.
So my question to you is, April, have you identified a Republican that you hope to work with to bring in bipartisan legislation for the good of the country? And I don't mean you hope to. I mean, have you identified a partner? Because at this stage, I think that's what we need.
You mean on immigration? You know what? I have not spoken directly with one, you know, with one person yet. I mean, I've been, you know, I jumped into the race in October and I've been swimming very fast. But I would probably go back to all of those that supported, you know, the bipartisan immigration thus far. And I do think that once we get through this election cycle, that there is a driving on both sides of the aisle to get something done. And from our, by the way, from our Democratic mayors as well across the country, who are seeing so many, refugees, so many asylum seekers that are streaming into the cities in terms of resources. But if you look at that comprehensive immigration bill that almost passed, it had increased security at the border, increased technology to track at the border, still pathways to citizenship. I do want to get the dreamers, those that have always been here, they have a pathway to citizenship. And a visa program. We need immigrants for our workforce, and particularly those who are skilled at a lot of, and those who have been, oh my gosh, how many have gone to college here? And we'd like to, as opposed to leaving, to be able to contribute back into our economy.
And let me bring up a couple of foreign policy issues. When it comes to the war in Gaza between Israel and Hamas, there's a piece in the New York Times just today raising the question as to whether or not Benjamin Netanyahu is actually extending the war in Gaza for his own personal reasons. CNN reporting that Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is saying that Ukraine could lose the war against Russia if Congress doesn't approve aid. When it comes to Israel and Hamas, what should the posture of the United States government be towards Israel?
Well, this is, is a hot button for so many people. This war began because of Hamas's unprovoked murderous attack on Israeli civilians. And, I always say, it is a terrorist organization and Israel has the right to defend itself. Now, it is a humanitarian crisis that we have to give more aid. We have to make sure if they go into Rafah that there is, a clear path to get civilians out. But you know what? There could be a ceasefire tomorrow if Hamas would just release the hostages, which they won't. And what we forget often is that, Hamas is a terrorist organization. It's perfected integrating itself. And
would you support, as Senator Van Hollen has suggested, withholding aid from Israel unless humanitarian aid is
made? I would not put conditions on aid. I think it's a slippery slope in the long term. If you do it on this, you could do it on a whole host of things. And I think they've been a long ally. Having said that, the president was absolutely right to take Netanyahu to task and to demand him, particularly after the World Central Kitchen killings, to demand more aid in the region and to stop civilian, casualties to the greatest extent possible. Problem is, it's hard because, they've so infiltrated themselves within the schools, within the hospitals. But I would not do that. Now, with respect to, I do support, the Biden administration's calls for additional aid, and we've just got to be in there as much as possible. I also have to say on the Ukraine, we have to support the Ukraine because if we, withholding those dollars now, we could lose. If Putin is not going to stop at the Ukraine, he's going to keep on rolling into NATO. And so, if we don't fight them there, it's going to be fighting them somewhere else.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. April McLean Delaney is running in the Democratic primary in the 6th Congressional District. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll see you out
there
on the trail. Okay.
And check out my website, april@april4congress.com.
And you can hear all of our conversations with the candidates when you go to our website, wypr.org/midday, and when you subscribe to our podcast. Our series continues next week. On Monday, I'll speak with Democratic State Delegate Harry Bhandari about his candidacy in the 2nd District. And on Tuesday, I'll speak with Harry Dunn. He's a former Capitol Hill police officer whose experience during the insurrection on January 6, 2021 motivated him to run for Congress. He's a Democrat running in the 3rd. Fresh Air is coming up after news at the top of the hour, so stick around. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WYPR. Coming up next, it's Fresh Air at its new time, 1 o'clock. Then at 2, it's Here and Now.
I'm Scott Tong. Bernard McKinley decided to pursue a legal career when he was incarcerated and saw what inmates were subjected to.
The lack of ability for those individuals to, even have a voice to defend themselves, it sparked a passion in myself.
McKinley goes to law school this fall, and he tells his story next time in Here and Now.
That's coming up at 2 here on WIPR. This evening at 6:30, it's Marketplace.
years ago, back when houses were more affordable, other goods like groceries were actually more expensive.
The housing inflation of today is a little bit like the grain inflation of the 18th century.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Affordability Over Time. Next time on Marketplace.
6:30 this